Where you grow up can say a lot about you. It might explain your accent, the school you went to. But a national report released today by the Jesuit Social Services and Catholic Social Services Australia has found that the postcode you grow up in can explain far more than that. The report has pinpointed the worst postcodes to grow up in, where incarceration rates are highest, domestic violence and drug use are common, and education levels are low. The lead author of Dropping Off the Edge is former head of New South Wales Prisons, Professor Tony Vinson. He complied the same study, almost the same study, 7 years ago. Today he's released his latest snapshot of disadvantage. Tony Vinson, welcome back to Breakfast.
Yes, thank you.
7 years ago, it was hailed as a landmark study. Now you've developed this snapshot 7 years on. What can you tell us about the result of your new study? What's changed?
Well, when the sponsors commissioned this study, they were hoping that we'd find areas that had gone ahead in that period, and then one could get clues at least as to what influences could be brought to bear to break the pattern of the earlier report. Unfortunately, what we've found is quite the reverse, that there's such a marked degree of similarity in the fortunes of the same places as were highlighted on the last occasion.
So nothing's improved?
Very little has improved. I mean, yes, we haven't seen any of those locations that were featured before turned around in any substantial degree. There are occasionally, rarely, some green shoots in a way, because if you take a place like Iluka in northern New South Wales and others, but not too many, then you'll find that while there's a persistence of the same level of problem with income and education, training, unemployment, mental health, child maltreatment and so on, those sorts of characteristics, what you find is quite possibly due to the initiative of a handful of teachers, I don't know.
Mm.
But you see a remarkable elevation in the school performance as measured by the NAPLAN standard results. So that applies. But otherwise, look, the picture is unmistakably one of simply going along, if anything, a deepening of the problems, particularly with the tendency in Australia at the moment to increase the number of people locked up in our...
Okay. I want to come back to the sort of the green shoots and the signs of hope or any optimism, but just to stay with the bleakness of the picture, really, that nothing changed, I guess we are talking about areas of extreme disadvantage where unemployment is high and unemployment has usually been entrenched over generations. We're expecting too much to see real change in just 7 years.
Well, you know, it's been the practice of governments in the past to respond to information of this kind by introducing some limited program of 3 years
investing
facilitation, where it's taken decades and decades for the disadvantage to become so thoroughly entrenched. It is a bit strange to think we're going to turn it around in a couple of years. Where does that take us? It takes us to the conclusion, I think, that first of all, it's unjust, because if you look at the most extreme 3% of locations in each state and territory on the disadvantage scale, you'll find that there's such an enormous difference. If somebody said to me, you could expect double the rate of, say, imprisonment, or double the rate of limited education or youth involvement in work, young adults involvement in work, I think that was bad enough.
Mm.
We see results like in South Australia, 10 times higher rate of incarceration than the remainder of the state, the other 97%, 8 times higher in Queensland, 3.5 times higher in New South Wales, and a similar pattern occurring. So it's unjust. It's not the fair go that's supposed to be the central principle of our society. The other thing is to question the way in which the change effort has been handled, an emphasis on infrastructural, you know, and amenities and things of that nature,
mm-hmm.
where the evidence is becoming clearer and clearer from international studies, and I must say my own field experience, that you have to work with the community, qua community, as a community. You've got to strengthen its fundamental capacities for problem determination, sticking together, sticking to the task of bringing about change, what they call in the literature collective collective efficacy, building up the, you know, the central strength of the community.
Mm. In a sense, giving it, helping with capacity building within community, resilience in a community. So let's talk about how you do that and what's not happening. Because when we spoke to you 7 years ago, you were very hopeful that certain actions would turn the situation around relatively quickly. And you singled out, for instance, providing preschool education as a way to lift kids out of poverty and into education and get that platform set. Are you still hopeful that that is the answer? And has that happened anywhere? And what have we seen?
Yes, in a very small number of cases. This is by way of inference, because you've got locations that are running high on the problems that have built up over a long time. But not only depending on this study, but my own presence in classrooms and observing what teachers do and so on, you can get remarkable changes. It's a very fertile, you know, way of coming at the problem, but it's not the whole answer, of course. With that persistence of unemployment across the country in these locations, you know, it's all airy-fairy unless it's going to be accompanied by training and work opportunities. Really, this is a call to get serious about it. If we're really interested in what's happening to the upcoming generation, particularly, I mean, sadly, there may not be a huge amount one can do for older people.
Yeah.
So on, but it's the kids that we ought to have clearly in mind as a moral imperative in this field, and the emphasis, of course, on schooling, because it's so closely associated with health, with progress in one's career, having a career, and so on, that it would be foolish not to persist with that. And indeed, there was a government response previously, not based just on this information, but world trends, really, to realise that if you invest in getting kids off to a good start, you avoid what I've seen myself in my visits to schools, are dropping out as early as mid-primary. It's all over.
Mid-primary? Where are you seeing that?
Well, I don't want to mention by name and stigmatise the locations, but I've not only seen it, I've talked with teachers and so on. There are schools that I've encountered in another capacity where they throw everything and the kitchen sink at the children up to, say, mid-primary, on the basis that if we don't succeed in that period in engaging the children, in developing their interest in their education, in preserving the morale that's necessary to be a successful school student, then sadly, it's not going to improve. There's going to be misbehaviour. There's going to be the kids getting up everyone's nose, including their fellow students, because that's what the others tell me. We've had enough of this person by the age of, you know, what are we talking about, 9 or 10?
Yeah, and that makes it pretty hopeless, doesn't it? Tony Vinson, thank you very much for your work. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Professor Tony Vinson, his report, Dropping Off the Edge, has just been released by Jesuit Social Services and Catholic Social Services Australia, but it's not good enough for him to keep painting the picture. We really do need action. He mentioned Iluka and the change brought about maybe by a few good teachers in one school, and I guess that was the justification for the NAPLAN test. Julia Gillard said it would give us an indication of where the schools were struggling so they could invest resources into it. Seems like we've got to do a lot more of that.